You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, December 4th, 2023, and you're listening to me, Grandpa Dan, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. We're kicking off another week. I'm glad you could join us here. I'm always excited. Know that y'all are tuning in. Hoping you're getting something out of all of our great content here. As always, I like to start these Daily Nationalist shows reminding you we got our Sven Longshank support links there. His address did recently change, got moved to a different facility, so you want to note that change that we have there. And I haven't reminded anyone in a while, but at the bottom of these pages, it has a link there. You know, we can now accept Bitcoin at this address. I remind you once again, those were set up by Sven before he went away. So obviously, I don't have access to that. And obviously, he doesn't because he's in jail. So, I mean, if you have sent Bitcoin to those addresses, I mean, no worries. When he gets out, he can access those and have access to those funds. But just do be aware that that is something he set up. It's not something I've set up or I'm in control of or anything such as that. So here we are. We're kicking off another week. This year is almost over, if you can believe that. It goes by fast. The older you get, the faster it goes by. I've got two stories we're going to use this week, today. Both of these are from RT, and I think both of these kind of pertain to the notion of credibility. We hear the U.S. and its puppet states, or what they like to call their partners, you know, and this constant spouting about human rights and the democracy values of who we are and all of the rest of it. You're well aware of the terms. And I think we often don't stop to consider that how much of that is for domestic consumption. I read a story the other day recently, and of course, with the Israel bombing Gaza into oblivion disaster that's going on, and Anthony Blinken was over there talking with Netanyahu. And like basically, and just off the top of my head, it was something along the lines of the Israeli government wants to just go on and just basically genocide everyone in the Gaza Strip. And Anthony Blinken told him, well, you don't have the credit to do that. You don't have the credit to do that. We can give you cover to do this much, but you don't have the credit to go all in and do what you're wanting to do. And I was thinking, well, credit with whom? Because when a lot of times they make these statements, like they'll go, these various countries will go to the UN and make these grand pronouncements or declarations, and it doesn't change anything. And a lot of that, I believe, is geared towards domestic consumption. There's so much cover you can give. And I think this Israel Gaza conflict is really pulled the mask off of this, you know, off of the domestic credibility that this system has that we live under. You know, we had, as contrast, you had the Ukraine conflict, and we had all these different human rights things, atrocities that the Russians allegedly committed, only to find out like a few weeks later it all fell apart. And yeah, actually it was a hoax, or it was atrocity that the Ukrainians had committed, and they just swept that under the rug. Likewise, you had times when, the Russians launched a missile at a random apartment building and killed 5 civilians. This is an outrage. They all need to be tried as war criminals. Only you find out later it was actually a Ukrainian missile that went astray and crashed into an apartment building. Now, people remember this. And again, a lot of this is geared towards domestic consumption. You have to have this narrative. I'll get to that here in a minute. But people remember this, and now you turn around and you have the U.S. standing up here defending and shielding Israel while they're literally and intentionally carpet bombing apartment buildings, hospitals, refugee camps, and everything else. There's only so much credit, as Antony Blinken said, you can do. There's only so much cover. At some point in time, they lose this credit or credibility. Now, it's always important. I always say there's a reason if you look at an authoritarian regime, you know, it's a quote unquote authoritarian regime, which because words have been butchered so much in this modern world, we're not even sure exactly what that means. But you look at a country that has like an official dictator, you got a military guy or whatever. And oftentimes this authoritarian ruler, this king, this dictator, they'll hold elections sometimes. And the reason is because they got to have credibility. The people have to feel like they have bought into the system. Nobody wants to live. People do not want to tolerate living under a regime that is being imposed on them. So you have to have credibility. You have to have this fig leaf where the people say, I bought into it. So a dictator will hold an election and get 90% of the popular vote. Now, well, you know, because why do they do that? Because they have to have the people have to feel like they have bought into the system. Now, a lot of times a dictator may be doing a really good job and he really is getting 90% support. Why would somebody want to change out for a vague democracy system that may or may not work? But the point is, you have to have credibility with the domestic population, with those that you're ruling over. The fig leaf of credibility in the democracy systems of the West are falling one by one. You know, the individual things by themselves aren't enough to tear away that credibility. But you see, they're piling up. You had the 2020 election, and no matter how often the media and the government says, don't believe your lying eyes, trust us, this was the most legit election ever, people know what they saw. People saw the videos of them throwing out election observers, boarding up windows and unloading ballots out of trucks with nobody, like no chain of authority, custody, no chain of custody. I mean, people saw that. You know, they can keep telling you don't believe your lying eyes, you want to, and this chips away. People can deny it and act like, well, that's just one thing. Maybe next time if we vote harder, things will work out. You see these things start piling up, claiming it's an atrocity if a stray missile hits an apartment building and kills five people while sitting here and saying, defending Israel while they literally carpet bomb civilian areas and refugee camps. These things pile up and they're losing credibility. Let's go to our first story. It appears a man in Korea has been jailed. And what has he been jailed over? He's been jailed over a poem. The man has been sentenced to prison over a poem. Now, you might look, you might hear that or read the headline, and the thing drives me crazy about RT is they changed their headlines. The original headline was something like "Man Jailed Over Poem." They changed the headline, which kind of spoils the article. But anyway. Now, you might hear that, you know, a Korean man has been jailed over a poem that the government doesn't like. And you may jump to the conclusion that we must be talking about North Korea, right? Wrong. We're talking about South Korea. The title of the article says, U.S. ally jails poet for praising North Korea. A South Korean writer has been slapped with a prison term for praising North Korea in a poem. The Korean-held newspaper has reported Seoul Central District Court handed the 14-month sentence, his fourth such conviction, to the wordsmith on Monday, according to the outlet. The author, identified by the media as 68-year-old Lee Yoon-sup, was found guilty of violating the National Security Act, which prohibits citizens from glorifying North Korea. Now, you look at this, and you have to ask yourself, is this the actions of a legitimate government? I mean, how insecure in their legitimacy does a government have to be to jail a 68-year-old man over a poem? And claiming it's about national security. How is a poem going to tear down your national security? What are you so paranoid about? While you're constantly, everybody in the West is constantly bombarded with these stories, assailed with these stories about how awful and miserable North Korea is. Why? It's the hermit kingdom. It's this backward, horrible place where people are just digging for potatoes and starving to death. Well, I'm sure North Korea is not a utopia or heaven on earth. There's no such thing. I also know BS propaganda when I see it. And yet, South Korea feels so insecure in their legitimacy that they've got to throw this old guy in prison for writing a poem. The poem in question was titled Means of Unification, and in it, Lee urged the two Koreas to reunite under the leadership of the socialist government of Pyongyang. Well, if the North Korean government is so awful, like we're constantly being told, then what's the threat? People look at this and say, yeah, I think that's a bad idea, and just simply move on. It makes you wonder what it is they're not wanting you to look at, what it is that you're not wanting to consider. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, North Korean rule would be best for the South Korean people. I'm not saying it's not either. I don't know. I don't live there. That would be something for those people if they're to reunite, and they will reunite one of these days. That will be something for those people to decide. I have a feeling when we look at the trajectory that these Western democracy systems are on, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that you wind up with the last guy standing situation, not because of war. As these democracy systems seem to be burning themselves out, burning through their credibility, burning through their economic stability, it's not completely out of the question that you could see the South Korean regime just completely fail, just completely break down into chaos. And if there's chaos, the people are going to seek order. This is why people agree to be ruled over by kings and governments in the first place. They give up a certain amount of freedom with the idea that the government will restore some order. Now, as these economies in the West are faltering and failing, if the economic situation in South Korea were to collapse, the government was collapsed, lose all their credibility. And you have to understand, these people view their governments differently than we do. I've watched Korean dramas. I've kind of quit because they got kind of stale and kind of westernized. But if you watch enough Korean dramas, you laugh, but you do get an insight into their culture and the way they view things. If you watch American TV shows, for instance, the government is very seldom, if ever, wrong. Every government agency are hailed as heroes protecting the people from the terrorists or white supremacists or whoever the hell else. While the brave FBI is going around the world, you're not supposed to question why is the U.S. FBI operating internationally, but they're going around the world to protect the democracy values of who we are from the extremists and the terrorists and the haters or whatever else. South Koreans don't view their government that way. And like the vast majority of their TV shows or dramas, there's always a central character. The government is always corrupt. They're bought out by the corporations. It's a running theme. The president on down, all these assemblymen are a bunch of crooks, and they're on the take from these corporations. And it gives you, like I say, it's entertainment, but it gives you insight to the way these people view their government. They view their government as a bunch of crooks. They understand that plays out. They can put that writing in these shows because that's the way the people actually view the government. If not, the people would say, well, this is a stupid, absurd plot point. Instead, that plot point gets played over and over because that's the way the people view it. All their politicians are on the take from these big corporations. Unlike Americans who want to put these rose-colored glasses on and act like, you know, their representatives, their congressmen, their senators, their presidents actually give a crap about them. So you already have this thread where the people understand that the politicians are all bought and paid for, and the government is basically corrupt. Now, what's holding it together as it is was this view of relative economic prosperity, except that prosperity isn't really translating to the younger people. I'm kind of getting off onto a tangent, but we have to understand the underlying circumstances and culture in South Korea. Young people right out of college have a very tough start. There's just limited jobs. And when they get a job, the employers crap all over and treat them like slaves and treat them really bad because there is such a competition for the few jobs that are out there. And they get treated bad. people, young people have no chance of getting a home, or, you know, apartments, the cost of living is extremely high. All these things, there's this undercurrent. To get back on point, if you wind up with a point where the perceived relative economic prosperity collapses in South Korea, the government collapses, and you have utter chaos, the North Koreans could conceivably be welcomed in to restore order. You have this failure, you could have this potential failure and catastrophe and chaos. Look, if it doesn't matter how much propaganda they have flooded the South Koreans with about how backwards and crazy and those lunatics to the north, if you get those people in a situation of utter societal breakdown and chaos, they will welcome order no matter what form it takes. And you could conceivably have that be from the north. Again, that's just hypothesis. But getting back to the point of our story, you burn through this credibility when they say the North Koreans are backwards and oppressive, evil authoritarians, but the South Koreans in the enlightened democracy regime are putting a guy in prison over a poem. According to the poet, in his unified Korean state, in this unified Korean state, all citizens would have a job, as well as free housing, education, and health care. There would also be fewer people living in debt or dying by suicide, he suggests. South Korea, a key U.S. ally in the region, has one of the highest suicide rates in the world. This points to what we were just talking about, that's kind of background I was trying to give on South Korean society. On the outside, you have these skyscrapers and there's capital moving around and money. But the underlying lifestyle, the quality of living for the South Korean people is not what it appears to the outside. And the fact that they take this over-the-top reaction against this poet for pointing these things out, What's he threatening them with? People living in debt. You see, the debt trap in South Korea is extreme. People get into debt and it's extreme. They get locked into debt, dying by suicide, have the highest suicide rate. If it's a capitalist utopia, then why is everybody killing themselves? All citizens would have a job. See, because they don't. And if they do get lucky, in like people will show up, these guys, they'll have an interview for some corporation, and you have like 10 guys show up to do an interview. And then it turns out one of the interviewees is a relative of someone high in the company. So it winds up everybody wasted their time because that guy was going to get the job all along. Free housing. People get in debt over education. You see, he's actually pointing out to the faults by saying if under North Korea, we would have these things. The regime, the South Korean regime, reacts violently because putting a man in prison is a violent reaction. It is. It's a violent reaction to take a man's time, to rob a man's life away from him. He's sentenced to 14 months in prison. What they're doing is they're essentially stealing 14 months of his life away from him. Being put in prison is a violent reaction. The South Korean regime is reacting violently because what he's doing in this poem is he's shining a light. It's not about North Korea. He's shining a light back on the South Korean regime and saying, you see, this is illegitimate. They have this facade they put up to the world about this capitalistic, you know, oh, we have all of this money and we're doing so well and we have all these trinkets. He's shining the light on the reality, which is not incorrect when you get to the whole suicide thing. There's a reason people are killing themselves like mad in South Korea. Lee submitted his poem to an online contest in North Korea in November 2016 and won a prize. He had also shared his work on South Korean website, the Korean Herald said. The apparently harsh 14-month sentence was, the paper explained, due to the fact that the court treated the poet as a repeat offender, a repeat poetry offender. Lee had served terms in 2013, 14, and 17, 10 months in total, for praising North Korea and for posting, quote, anti-state content online, according to the paper. Now, when it comes to the case of this particular poem, this particular poem, it is factually correct. When it comes to this point, I'm not saying on everything you say, but the isolated case of this man and this particular poem, The truth of the matter is, he has more freedom of speech. He was given more freedom of speech from North Korea than South Korea. That's the reality. People see this. And again, these incidences by themselves aren't enough. But you see, they pile up. Just like Antony Blinken warning the Netanyahu government, y'all don't have enough credit for that. You see, they're burning through their credibility. The entire West is burning through their democracy credibility. They can keep chanting our democracy, our freedom, our values of who we are, but people see it. People see that all these people in the supposed free West have been banned from social media. They're seeing people being persecuted for the things they say. In a case like this, a poem, that's not the act of a government that's confident that they have the support of the people. Now, I'm going to jump to this other story, and I'm looking at the time. I'm probably not going to go through the whole story because we just hit it and get to the gist of it. But it has to do with my state, where I live. I live in Texas. And this article says U.S. state sues Pfizer over COVID-19 shot. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton filed a lawsuit against the pharmaceutical giant Pfizer on Thursday, alleging that the company misrepresented the effectiveness of its COVID-19 vaccine and sought to suppress public discussion on the product's failures. The lawsuit follows a six-month investigation by Paxton into alleged gain-of-function research by Pfizer and fellow COVID-19 vaccine developers Moderna and Johnson & Johnson. Now, I got to stop here for just a second because, you see, Americans have this idea, like all these corporations are in competition with one another, but they're not. It's laid out here after their investigation that actually Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, see, they were all conspiring together. Now, what makes this story interesting to me isn't about this in particular, because if you don't live in Texas, you probably don't know. For years now, they've been trying, you know, I'm always skeptical. I don't put any faith in politicians because this entire system is corrupt, but, you can judge something by the way the regime, to use Dr. Johnson's term, but by the way they treat a certain politician. You probably don't know if you don't live in Texas. They've been going after Ken Paxton for years now. In fact, just earlier this year, they tried once again to kick him out of office. They actually went in, basically suspended him as attorney general and held impeachment hearings against him to try to kick him out. And it didn't work. He had enough popular support that they couldn't kick him out. They tried, but he had enough popular support that they couldn't kick him. They had been trumping up charges against him. They tried to do some charge about, oh, he was paying off a developer to, you know, paying somebody to, supposedly remodel his home, only the guy didn't actually remodel his home. And when it came down to it, the numbers they were throwing around were chump change. It was obviously, but they've been going after Ken Paxton for years. Now, I can look at this as an observer of political reality in the world we live in, and I'm like, there's something about Ken Paxton they don't like. They're trying to take this guy down. They just keep coming after. They'll come up with another charge. They've accused him of everything in the world, and they can't seem to make it stick. And then you come across this. Well, it turns out what? He's been going after Pfizer about the COVID-19, about lying about these shots, which they have made billions of dollars on. Pfizer engaged in false, deceptive, and misleading acts and practices, making unsupported claims regarding the company's COVID-19 vaccine in violation of Texas Deceptive Trade Practices Act, Paxton said in a statement, arguing the company had illicitly made billions of dollars in profit. Corporations wouldn't exist. They are government creation. I will say that again. A corporation is not the same as a business that has organically just gotten really big. Corporations, by their very nature, are a government creation. The infrastructure, the regulations set up that make setting up a corporation are set up by the government. So corporations exist by government policy, by government regulations. we all know well that they were able to rake in these billions of dollars because they were working hand in hand with the government, the federal government. The federal government was pushing all of this. The federal government spent all of this money buying up COVID shots because they were going to turn around and quote unquote give them out for free. So the federal government enabled this crooked behavior. Do you think the federal government didn't know this was going on? Paxton specifically challenged Pfizer's claim that its shot was 95% effective against the novel coronavirus, arguing that this was a statistical trick called relative risk reduction, which the U.S. FDA admitted might mislead consumers by presenting a treatment as more effective than it is. Clinical trial data showed the shot actually decreased the likelihood of contracting COVID-19 by just, get this, 0.85%, the lawsuit said. They're claiming 95%. Turns out it's 0.85%. Remember when they were telling everybody this was going to end the pandemic, you're going to go out and get these vaccines and it would shut down, we're going to stop the pandemic, the virus, the deadly virus in its tracks, and we're going to shut down, you just got to get this. And then they started walking that back to, well, it's actually not going to keep you from getting it, but you won't die. You won't get it as bad, which of course is something you can't actually measure. How do you know? It was all a fraud. According to the complaint, the pandemic got worse after the majority of Americans were vaccinated against the disease, pointing out that the official government report showed that in at least some places, a greater percentage of the vaccinated were dying from COVID-19 than the unvaccinated. Now, I don't know about y'all, because our overriding theme here is about credibility. The systems here in the West are whittling away credibility. How many people now, when you go to the doctor and they say, oh, well, I'm going to write you a prescription for this, you don't question that now. Before, you might not have questioned it. It'd be like, oh, okay, well, if that's what I need, I'll go fill this prescription and start taking it. I'm not. I can tell you for me personally, and I know I'm not the only one. If the doctor says, well, I want to write you a prescription for this, he's like, okay, well, what's that about? You know, skeptical, very skeptical. I'll give you a personal example for me. As you know, I've had two cancer surgeries in the past year for two different cancers. And my original one was for a very bad malignant melanoma. And I had it removed and everything. God has blessed me, by the way. And I keep having to do these scans. And so far, everything's coming back. I'm very grateful for that. On my immediate follow-up after the surgeries, when, you know, I had to see the oncologist, he recommended, well, you know, you have this percentage of chance that it could come back. And if it comes back, you see, it doesn't come back on your skin. Melanoma, if it comes back, it comes back in your organs and is extremely, extremely, extremely aggressive and will try to kill you. He says you can reduce this chance by undergoing this therapy, is immunotherapy. He said, and he says, you know, he was encouraging me to do this. He says, well, think about it. And when you come back in, we'll discuss it further and see where you're at. Well, I look into this immunotherapy, gave me some paperwork on it. And I actually read the paperwork. Now, see, before somebody might have said, well, doc, if it reduces my chance, I guess I need to do it. But see, I'm skeptical. I ain't taking nothing. I don't take any of these people, whether it's the FDA or just the doctor you're seeing. I don't take any of them at their word now. I'm assuming every doctor that writes a prescription, because you know now doctors, if you're old enough, you remember when doctors just treated you and now all they want to do is write you a prescription. If you go see your doctor, they're going to find something to write you a prescription for before you get out of there. Now, don't you figure they're getting some kind of kickback? They're just prescription writers. Skeptical. They're losing credibility. Now, for me, I went home and read through the paperwork that they gave me and I got down into that fine print. Well, it turns out the immunotherapy can also sometimes, on occasion, just because supposedly, I said, well, explain this to me. Well, and he said, basically, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, I may not get it exactly right. It's been, you know, a little bit now. These are basically, it programs your immune system that if any cancer cells pop up, your immune system will recognize that and attack the cancer cells as if it was germs. Okay. First thing that did to me was make me think, this is kind of not unlike these mRNA shots. I get to reading the paperwork that they gave me on this and get down to the fine print. You got to find that fine print. It's like when they do these pharmaceutical commercials on TV. And, you know, they tell you all about how this is going to make your, this new drug is going to make your life happy-go-lucky. You're just going to be just like these happy, smiling black people in the commercial. And you're going to be so happy once you start taking this drug. And then they get to the end and there's a possible side effects. Then they talk so fast you can't hear what they're saying. You get down to the fine print. Well, it turns out this immunotherapy, on some occasions, actually, it haywires your immune system, and your immune system just decides all of your internal organs are something that should be attacked, and it will attack your internal organs and can kill you. I follow back up, and he says, so what about that immunotherapy? Which, by the way, you had to come in and get in an IV treatment like every 10 days, 2 weeks, something like that, I don't remember. And it was like $1,500 per treatment. And I'm like, yeah, I ain't doing that shit. And he's like, well, you know, it could, you know, yeah, I don't care. I'm telling you, this is my answer. I'm not doing that shit. Skeptical because they're losing credibility. That you want to write you a prescription for all of this crap. And then when you have side effects, oh, that's okay. We'll give you another prescription that will offset the side effects. And next thing you know, you're taking 58 damn pills a day. And all of this is backed up by the FDA, who rubber stamps whatever the pharmaceutical companies. The Pfizer, in this case, the Pfizer was able to do this because the FDA is sitting over there rubber stamping their research. People, if nothing else came out of this, understanding that the FDA doesn't back up. They don't replicate the pharmaceutical company's research. They don't look at the Pfizer's research and go, okay, we're going to hand this over to our scientists and they will follow your research and see if they get the same results, which is what people thought happened before. Now everybody knows. All they do is hand over their research and the FDA people who have already turned in their job application at Pfizer will sit there and go, rubber stamp, rubber stamp, rubber stamp. Yep, your research looks good. It's approved. Credibility. None of these things by themselves are enough. But let me tell you something. They're piling up. They are piling up. And the democracy systems of the West, day by day, with each new story, with each new narrative that fails, is losing credibility. Wrap up on that note. I hope you enjoy your week. I'm glad you joined me here today. I hope you'll check out my Parish of the Patriots show tomorrow. It's my show. It's my show. The Daily Nationalist, I'm getting the groove of it, but it's always been Sven's show. I'm just a fill-in here. My show is Parish of the Patriots. If you've never checked it out, I invite you to do so. As always, we have great content Monday through Friday. Dr. Johnson's work speaks for itself. Be sure and check him out. I plan to be back here Friday to see you at the end of the week for the Daily Nationalist show on Friday. As always, keep the faith. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.